The A-List Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into the A-List Podcast. As always, I'm Kwani Lunas, joined by A'Shaud Blakely and Gary Washburn. I think the last time we spoke was actually right before the NBA draft. So, of course, this week we get to talk about it. We can just start up the jump for you two. What do you two make of the only pick that the Celtics made in the 2023 draft with Jordan Walsh? What do you think he brings to the table? Because a lot of people were surprised by that one.
I'm not backflips or cartwheels or pulling out with confetti thinking like the Celtics won the draft. Celtics won the draft. He's a good player in the second round. The impression I got from Boston and just the way they approached it was, this was a draft not so much about acquiring talent, but acquiring assets down the road. And they did that. I mean, they leave the draft with a player that I think over time could be a decent rotational guy for them, in Jordan Walsh. And they get 4 second-round picks overall, total. And so that, you know, it's an okay night. But if you think about it, it's not like this team had significant needs that they were going to look to address through the draft anyway. So I get why Brad Stevens decided to take more of a let's just get some assets and keep it moving approach versus let's try to, you know, somehow make some noise in the draft. Because really, after the top 2-3 picks, I'm not sure there's a whole lot of difference between players number 4 versus player number 44 in the draft. I'm not sure there's a significant drop off in that regard. So it was okay night. It was a meh kind of draft for the Celtics for me.
Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of options. They had the 25th pick they got from Memphis. I think a lot of people thought they were going to use that pick, but obviously I don't think they wanted the guaranteed first-round contract, and they passed up on some pretty good players. A couple of Sherrod's guys, one of my guys who they actually drafted for Detroit, which is Marcus Sasser, because they dropped down to the second round. They dropped to the 38th and 39th picks, and they ended up trading the 39th pick, kid from Washington State. They traded him too. But I think Jordan Walsh is a project guy. He's a one and done out of Arkansas. I mean, as we see in this draft, there's a lot of players who probably would have better served their draft stock if they had went back to school. A lot of one and dones. And I think nowadays some of these guys are like, as long as I get drafted, I'm good. I don't care about where I land, I just want to go to a team and fulfill my dream, where you probably cost yourself a couple million dollars in draft stock and salary by leaving early, being kind of an unproven or unknown quantity, or being a guy who's more of a developmental project. So I don't look to see if Jordan Walsh is going to like really help out this season. I think he's going to be probably on a two-way contract in the G League most of the year. And just kind of developing, just like our friend J.D. Davidson did last year, and we'll see what happens with J.D. this year. But I think, obviously, as we've learned under the Brad Stevens regime, draft night ain't no big deal for him. He'll trade a draft pick, a first-round pick in a minute. I don't think as long as the Celtics draft in the 20s, he's not going to be excited about the draft. And, you know, and I think sometimes people – maybe overestimate the draft. And I think Brad kind of says, well, we're not going to get a superstar at 25, although you might in this draft. It's a very unpredictable draft. But I also think he believes we should trade for future assets. We get that future first-round pick in the Marcus Smart deal. We got a bunch of second-round picks that we can throw in the trades as sweeteners in the future. And then we got this Walsh kid who will send to Maine, we'll put him in the system, and maybe he can help in the next couple of years. But other than that, not much of a big deal with Jordan Walsh. I've seen him at Arkansas, good defender, but not a long resume. Played 1 year, was not the star of the team. Was kind of a helper. So if you're, if you're excited, I don't know the real reason to be excited except for his maybe potential. I mean, he averaged 7 points, 4 rebounds, and a steal as a freshman. So, I mean, his best work is going to be in the NBA.
That's very
respectfully.
Yeah.
Respectfully, Gary.
yeah. I like no that. Shade.
No shade. No shade. But I think that the point that you made about him, that his best days as a basketball player are probably going to be in the NBA, and the mention of JD, both of those guys were like big time recruits coming out of high school. And they did like basically a semester of college and decided we're ready to go. Thanks for coming out. I think we're starting to see teams like the Celtics recognize the value in these five-star recruits that you can basically develop without being forced to play them in your own system. And I think JD, for example, I think is a guy that's going to compete for playing time this year. I think, if we're being completely honest and candid, I would have liked to have seen him get a shot to play a little bit last year, more so than we did. He's big, strong. And when you look at Jordan Walsh, he's more physically imposing than I think people realize. He is no shrinking violet. He's a guy that has yet to really go through, the maturation that you have when you get to the NBA and the offseason workouts and all that stuff. He's going to be, I think, a very physically gifted, talented player for them who's going to be, best case scenario, 3-and-D guy. He's going to lock up the best wing defender, and he's going to knock down corner threes. That, to me, is like the ceiling for him. And on this Celtics team, to have a young guy who can do that, you will take that and run with it. Because, again, he brings value that you don't already have in stock. You don't have a guy that's comfortable being an elite defender who can knock down threes. And it's even less of something you have on stock when you look at the fact that Marcus Smart is gone. So it's a good addition long term, but it still doesn't address some of the needs that you have immediately. But I will say, and we'll get into this in a little bit, when you add a guy like Porzingis, that's a different conversation when you talk about things that you added and the impact of those things on this present day team.
So it sounds like from both of you are saying that Jordan is definitely something or someone to keep an eye on for the future. But to your point about Porzingis, Thursday is when he'll officially be debuted for the Boston Celtics. What are you two looking forward to from that press conference? And hopefully we'll learn from him during that time as well.
Yeah, Gary.
Well, not really much. I mean, I think I think he's a personable guy. He's a guy who's, I've seen him in interviews before, definitely a guy who understands the media game and knows that some of the things he needs to say and knows the situation that he's in. So I expect him to just say, all the right things. He's ready to win. He wants to be part of a championship caliber team, that he's completely healthy. He's ready to play 70 plus games. I expect him to say all the right things, that he's playing the best. He played the best basketball of his career over the last year or so with the Washington Wizards. So I expect that he is going to say exactly what he should say, give people peace of mind. I think he understands that it was, not the most popular trade in Boston in terms of how some of the people felt about Marcus Smart. So I think he'll say all the right things. He'll give the Celtic faithful peace of mind that, he'll be ready to play. He'll be ready to play with Jason and Jaylen. He'll be ready to be that third option and, ready to help the team try to, pursue their championship dreams.
I'm curious to hear how he addresses the health-related questions. Because you're right, this was a great season for him from a health standpoint. But what was different about this season than the previous ones? Why was he, for whatever reason, be able to stay healthy? And also, I'm curious to see how he addresses the fact that you're going to be the number three at best option. You've never been that far down the pecking order, no matter where you've been. From a psychological standpoint, I'm curious how is that something that he's looking forward to? Is that something that, he's matured to where he can accept that now? Or is that something that he might not be all that crazy about? Because you know, I think for him, it's a great situation. I mean, when you have that type of skill set, when you're making that kind of cheddar, and they're basically saying there's going to be at least two cats who are going to be ahead of you in the food line, and you're still going to get all the food, get all the great stuff at the buffet. You should be cool with that. You should be really cool with that. I want to hear him talk about that. I want to hear him acknowledge that, yes, I'm going to be cool being that third guy. And because I think about when Kyrie Irving came to Boston and how clearly he was going to be that guy, and he was going to be the guy that lead these young guys, and didn't quite work out that way. And I think part of it had to do with the fact that those young guys were a hell of a lot better than he thought they were going to be. And they were a little bit closer. That gap that he thought existed between them wasn't quite as wide as he thought it was. And with Porzingis just kind of flipping, you know, conversely, I'm not sure the gap that exists between him and Jason and Jalen is as close as I think the Celtics would want it to be. Because those guys are really good. And while I think he is certainly talented, I'm not sure that that gap between those two and Porzingis is that significantly closer than the gap between, let's say, those two and Malcolm Brogdon. And if that's the case, how is he going to handle that? I mean, because everyone is just assuming that he's going to be that third piece. But I'm not sure he's going to be, to be frank and keep it real, respectfully speaking, no shade, I don't know if he's going to be good enough to be the number three for this team to win a championship. I don't know if he's going to clearly distinguish himself as the third best player on this team. I think he's got the skills to do it. I just don't know if that's going to translate into stats and impact, which is really what it comes down to when you talk about him.
Take your first swing at betting MLB on FanDuel and get 10 times your first bet amount in bonus bets, up to $200. That's right. Just bet $20 and you'll land $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. That's $200 you can spend betting everything from the money line to the over-under to who you think is going to hit the first home run. All in an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Plus, when you win, you can get paid instantly. There's no better place to bet on MLB than FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. So sign up today and visit FanDuel.com/Boston to get up to $200 in bonus bets. That's FanDuel.com/Boston. FanDuel, official partner of Major League Baseball. 21 plus and over and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 deposit required. Refund issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Hope is here. Gambling helpline MA.org or call 1-800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Well, that being said, if you don't think he's the third best player on the team, who do you think steps up in that role?
Brogdon. I think Malcolm Brogdon could be the third best player. One, because I think the talent is enough to where he could be that impactful. Two, I think he might be playing with a little bit of an edge slash chip this year, knowing that they didn't really want you around. They had moved on from you, and you are here by default. And I think Malcolm, I think there's going to be a part of him that's going to want to prove and validate he should be here, that he was meant to be with this team. And so I could see him stepping his game up even more so than he did this past season. Gary Washburn up here shaking his head. What you got to say, Willis?
Gary's smirking.
I'm just like, yo, you here by default. Like, you're nothing. Like,
am I wrong?
You're damn, garbage. Dude. I ain't going to you for those self-esteem classes. My goodness, man. I mean,
if I said, hey, listen, I'm going to bring in, like, Jimmy Joe Jenkins. Make him part of the show. And then for some reason, that don't work out. But I said, but Gary, you here. So, Gary, you stay in here. You good. You're going to be feeling some kind of way about my team. If you knew I was planning to get rid of you for Jimmy Joe Jenkins, you're going to feel some kind of way.
Jimmy Joe Jenkins.
Third pick in the 2023 NBA draft.
God.
But seriously, though, you will be in your feelings, a little bit in your feelings about that. And that might be just enough for you to just kind of play with a little more edge, a little chip on your shoulder.
I mean, but not if you knew it was your fault. Essentially, right?
That's a level of self-awareness I just don't think NBA players have.
Fair.
They never get traded because it's they did something wrong. Mm-hmm. They get traded because another team thinks they can help them. That's the thing.
Well, I don't think Brogdon did anything wrong. I think he just got hurt in the playoffs.
That's what I mean. And the Clippers didn't want that. So you can't blame them for the one.
Because there's so much mystery surrounding the damn injury. Mm-hmm. It's never been officially diagnosed. I mean, you know, it was like, it's never been officially released by the team what the hell it is. Mm-hmm. If he's going to have surgery, we keep hearing, oh, he'll be ready for the season. There's just so much vagueness that I understand the Clippers being like, wait a minute. Like, if this dude needs like a Tommy John surgery in terms of like his elbow ligament replacement, like that's a significant injury. That's nothing to pass up. And you understand the Clippers have dealt with injuries for a long, long time.
They know.
Dating back to Blake Griffin, and then it turned out it's Kawhi and Paul hurt every other game. So they're not trying to acquire another injured player that might not be ready for next season or might be ready halfway through the season. So I understand what the Clippers are trying to do in that sense. They still need a point guard. So if I'm Malcolm, he's a member of the Players Association. He's an 8-year veteran now. He should understand this is a big boy league, and this is how it goes. This is how it goes sometimes. We've all been offered jobs because the person who was really offered turned it down.
Mm.
So do you not take the job? No, man, I wasn't your first choice, man. So fuck you. You know, no. I mean, you know. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, you take the job and you...
What do I sign?
And you run with it because you're like, I'm going to show you that I should have been your first choice. You play with a chip on your shoulder. I'm going to show you you shouldn't have even thought about trading me.
Mm-hmm.
But we've all been somebody's second choice. We've all, you know, gotten an offer knowing that, you know, like my girl, what's her name? Kwani, Loving Basketball, who got that spot at USC because old girl got pregnant. Like... You know what I'm saying? It's like she ran with it, right? Like she didn't turn around. Oh, girl's like, the only reason you here is woo, got pregnant. Like Sanaa Lathan was like, yo, I'm about to dominate. I'm going to take advantage of this opportunity. Okay, I got the spot because somebody else couldn't play or was injured. But folks, well, if you haven't watched Love and Basketball, please watch.
Yeah,
great movie. But my point is that she took somebody's spot because somebody got hurt and somebody reminded her of it. So what? I'm here. So I'm going to speak Sherrod's language here. Malcolm's checks are still clearing, right? Like,
yes, they are.
Okay. They still clearing from the Boston Celtics. He's still on the payroll. They still trying to win a championship. So take a week, get in your feelings, man, that ain't right. And then by July 1, or get back to working out and get your rehab in, because you got a job to do, brother. So that's how I feel about Malcolm. I understand it's a big boy lead. It ain't funny. It ain't right. But we've all in this industry that we are in have gotten an offer because some fool who they consider better than us turned them down. And so we got the offer, and I ain't asking no questions about, well, who else got the job? Who, you know, that's not right. I'll should be first. You offered me, I'm taking it, and I'm running with it.
All right, looking forward to Malcolm Brogdon, actually. We just talked about him a little bit. But actually, yeah, let's just move on to Summer League. That's coming up within the next few days for the Celtics. I believe their schedule starts on July 7th or 8th.
Eighth.
Okay, thank you. Jordan Walsh will be featured in that showcase, so to speak. Of course, JD Davidson will also be a part of the festivities, if you want to call it that. But what do you, it's Summer League, we talk about it every year, but what do you think the Celtics will be able to learn? Assistant Coach Dobbins will be the head coach for the Celtics in Summer League this year. But what do you think kind of developments are going to be needed from not only the players, but maybe even the coaching staff as well during this time?
Well, the guy I'm looking forward to seeing as far as playing is JD Davidson. Mm-hmm. I just watching him near the end of the season and just kind of the spot duty minutes he got. I saw him play in Maine a couple times as well. I've had a couple of conversations with him. And the thing that jumps out to me, and I think Garrett can agree with me in this, he's a lot bigger than you would think. And I don't think it's because of this amazingly awesome weight program the Celtics have been on. I think it's because he's just naturally built to be someone who's going to be able to play bigger. He reminds me a little bit of Rajon Rondo from the standpoint of he has a very kind of diminutive or kind of a diminished size look about him. And yet when you're up close, you see that he has some physical things going on that are bigger than you thought. And JD, I think this is his time to dominate. I want to see him out there dominate Summer League. I want him to make, you know, Joe Mazzulla really think long and hard about him as that first guard off the bench. I want him to put pressure on Peyton Pritchard. I want him to put pressure on, you know, whoever they decide is going to be the starting point guard. Because I think from a physical standpoint, I think he's going to be able to compete. And the biggest thing, and to me, he's the most natural point guard they have at this point. You look at some of those lobs that he throws. You look at just some of the passes that he's made in the limited time we've seen him. He has a lot of the qualities, I think, that give something to this team that they don't have necessarily as much of as they would want. And I want to see him use those skills. I want to see him stand out in Summer League. And he kind of go from there.
Yeah, I agree with Sherrod. I'm intrigued by J.D. Davidson. I have been since he was taken out of Alabama in the 53rd overall pick. And I know, like, you know, it's tough on these guys. It's like you look at these players who could be superstars eventually, but they jump right into the draft. And then they fall in the draft. So now they're kind of swimming upstream in terms of trying to gain a reputation, trying to learn the game. If, you know, JD's another one of those kids that probably should have stayed in school for another year, especially, you know, that Alabama team last year was nothing to play with. They were a great team. They fell short. They were number one for a long time. You just add him onto that roster, and I'm sure, and maybe, who knows, maybe he left because they were bringing up a guard in who was going to take his minutes. Who knows? But, you know, when you have these guys and Jordan Walsh, you have players who you just want to see develop, and you want to see them living in the gym, working hard. And then obviously they're playing against their peers. They're playing the bench against a bunch of guys with one and dones and a bunch of rookies. So they're going to be, they should, like Sherrod said, JD should take a step forward. He was pretty good as the Summer League. I remember last Summer League progressed. I think he had a 28 point game toward the end of the Summer League, and he was handling things well. So second Summer League, he should handle it well. Jordan Walsh, I want to see how he develops. I just read some quotes where he said he was kind of stifled a little bit at Arkansas, and now he can be free, and this is the time to be free. And thirdly, I want to see Tony Robbins, because I don't think I've ever seen Tony talk. So it'll be interesting to hear him yell commands and all that, because he wears a mask, constantly wears a mask, you know, wants to be super safe. So you don't, you know, you give Tony the head nod, how you doing or whatever, but you don't see him talk too much. So I'll be fascinated to see what kind of coach Tony is. And he's a guy who's another riser. He's under the Brad Stevens, you know, tree. He was here before Udoka came in, so he did not leave with the Udoka crew. But I'll be interesting, because it's a good opportunity for Tony. Like, you know, he wants to rise in this coaching game, and, you know, coaching Summer League is a way to do that. So I'll be intrigued. And I'm sure they'll bring some other guys in who are, you know, maybe an intriguing name or two, maybe a vet, a guy looking for a second chance. We'll see how the Summer League roster rounds out. I know they're starting to practice later this week. But I think quite honestly, it's going to be just fun to watch. It's always fun. It's a relaxing atmosphere. You know, if you haven't gone to Vegas for Summer League, check it out. You can see two games. You know, the gyms are connected, so you can always see, you know, there's going to be the Victor Wembanyama summer. So people are going to be really excited. The place is going to be packed that first Friday night. And it will be good to see the Celtics kind of just move forward from last year, see some new guys in the uniform, and just try to move forward after what was a tough ending of last year.
Yeah, and just to piggyback off of the comments about Tony, the thing about Tony that he doesn't get nearly enough credit for is the work that he's put in with Jalen. Mm-hmm. I mean, he works a lot with Jalen. And we talk about Jalen's growth and all the things that he's doing a much better job of and how he gets better year after year after year. Tony Robbins has been there essentially, you know, from the time Tony has been here working with Jalen. So it'll be interesting to see how does he manage a team of players as opposed to working and doing really good work on an individual basis. Because you're right. I mean, Tony's real quiet, but Tony got some dog in him. He got some legit dog in him, which I do respect. I absolutely respect, and I'm going to leave it right there. But I know for a fact Tony got some dog in him.
Before we wrap up, I want to address something I've seen on Celtics Twitter, because I don't think a week can go by without some kind of drama or made up, if not legitimate, rumors decide to spread across the internet. Marcus Smart gets traded, and I will quote the tweet, and this is not a source or anything, but this was a fan of basketball, I imagine, that said Marcus Smart got traded. Jason Tatum wrote an obituary while Jaylen Brown posted his fit when he was with Jude Bellingham. I wonder. So, of course, that tweet turned into drama. And again, we take Twitter with a grain of salt, but that being said, there was a report a few years ago that they got into a little altercation in the locker room. What do you two think of the fact? I don't think it's a big deal that he didn't post about Marcus leaving. It's just like your coworker goes somewhere else. I don't think you need to have a tribute every time someone leaves, but I'm curious if that raised any red flags for you that he didn't post a goodbye for Marcus.
No, I mean, it would have been nice if he did, but it's not like it's mandatory, nor should it be something expected. And the other thing, too, is that we don't know where he's at or what he's doing. I mean,
he's in the Middle East, according to his Instagram. So
I don't know about the Wi-Fi. I don't know if you know, you've got Brock, you know, that, you know, Joe Sway, really bad Wi-Fi in the Middle East. Because, you know, Joe Sway Wi-Fi is pretty bad. So I don't know if they got better.
Not Joe Sway taking bullets.
That's my guy. That's my guy. Love him. But you just don't know why. And the thing that I've found with a lot of players is that there are conversations and communications that are had that don't go public. There's an understanding between guys that, you know, this is how I feel. And rather than just let the entire world know how I feel, I'm going to come to you and be very direct. And let's just say I would not be surprised if Jalen had a very direct one-on-one grown-ass man conversation with Marcus. They had, I think it's very fair to say, a very somewhat complicated but understandable relationship where the respect was never an issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jalen will be the first to tell you that there are things that he took from that relationship that made him a better player, a tougher player from a mental standpoint. And Marcus, I think, became a better leader for trying to understand where to meet talented players like Jalen, as opposed to having them be where you want them to be. Where is that happy medium where you can meet and work together and accomplish, you know, a lot of great things? They both grew tremendously, not only in the framework of the team, but also just in the framework of them understanding and appreciating and embracing each other for who they are. So, yeah, it would have been nice if you'd have done that. Yeah, but I don't think it's I think it's too easy to say, oh, gotcha, they got drama. That's I think it's a big nothing burger, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I think people are looking for read too much into different personalities. Like Jason's more expressive on Twitter, and Jalen doesn't tweet a lot. He doesn't open up a lot on social media. He's not that he posts mostly pictures.
He's about his brand online for sure.
Yeah, it's about his brand.
Tatum is like more expressive.
You know, Jason. You know, and Jalen might be trying to still digest the situation. I don't know. I mean, I just think people are looking for things to be controversial about. Oh, do they have beef? Like, even if they did, okay, even if, like, they didn't get along over the years, I can't see Jalen being like, yeah, I'm glad he's out of here. I mean, as a friend, you celebrated with that guy, went through tough wins, you know, excruciating losses with that guy, and you're like, oh, I'm glad, like, you know, even if you weren't like the closest. And in the bubble, as I, you know, had seen and reported, like they got into it and they had to be separated and they had some meetings and days, but that was 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now, folks, like the bubble is working on, we're working on 3 years.
We all went through a lot in the bubble.
Yeah.
I wasn't even in the bubble.
Yeah. It was 3 years ago now that happened. Okay. Two highly competitive players, after a really tough loss. Remember, they lost the opening game to Miami. They were kind of stunned, just like this series recently. Then game two, they lost again, basically the same way. Remember, game one, they had a 15-point lead in the fourth quarter, early fourth quarter. The Heat came back. Jason went for that game-winning dunk, or tying dunk, or game-winning dunk. Adebayo blocked it at the rim, one of the best blocks I've ever seen. And then Miami won that game in overtime. Game two, the Celtics again with a lead. Miami comes back and takes it from them again. So they were down 0-2 in a series that a lot of people thought they should be winning and should have won, just happened. Mm-hmm. And the locker room got into it, were arguing. They were frustrated. They were upset. They were surprised. So if you want to focus on that, 3 years ago, and since then, and after Jalen was hurt the next year in the playoffs, they've been to the finals and been to the Eastern Conference Finals. For the thing, Jalen is like, I'm good. I'm glad he's gone. If that's the case, why wouldn't he send all these tweets out hyping up Porzingis? So happy that we got Porzingis. That's my guy. Like,
finally a good player on this team.
I mean, if he really was trying to troll, if he was really trying to let people know, man, I'm good on Marcus, like, if you didn't go all the way with it,
yeah,
maybe he just doesn't feel the need to do a soliloquy. Maybe, like you said, Sharadi had a personal conversation, said goodbye, I'm sorry, I love you, we'll be friends, you know, we'll see you next time whenever we face each other, and we moved on.
Yeah.
You know, some people don't have to go public. You know, I mean, I'm not like, you know, I could be personally, like, if something happens to somebody and they post it on Facebook or something, you know, you can like it or whatever, or something, you know, I tend to reach out to the person personally and be like, congratulations, instead of pushing like, or, you know, I tend to reach out to them personally. I want them to know, hey, I saw it. Good luck, you know, or I'll send them a text or something. So it's one-on-one as opposed to like, thank you, everybody, or congratulations. And everybody can see that I'm congratulating you, right? Like, some people ain't like that. So Jason had his way. I'm sure he's still digesting the trade. Everybody's still digesting it. Maybe Jalen's just in the Middle East like, man, I'm going to think about basketball when I get back to Boston. You know, when I get back home right now, I'm clearing my mind. I'm figuring some things out. So I think people are just trying to search for a story. He didn't say goodbye in an emotional post on Twitter or Instagram. Like, you know, as I said, now if Porzingis said, can't wait to get started, and Jalen said, yeah, man, love that you're here, you know, this is a great trade, then okay. We ain't heard from Jalen. So, you know, let's wait on this. I know we're all looking for stories. It's kind of the calm before the storm before free agency starts. So I think folks should concentrate on who the Celtics, you know, we can discuss that real quick. There's two guys that just became available. The Celtics could go after three guys Shirai brought one of them up. And y'all tell me what y'all think about these three guys, Derrick Rose, Cam Reddish, or my personal favorite, Torian Prince. I've always liked Torian Prince's game. Minnesota did not pick up his option. He's a 3-and-D guy. He's a dog. I thought the Celtics should have gone after him before the trade deadline. He's coming off a major extension. Not major, but I think he was making like $13 or $14 million. I think he signed like a two-year $14 million deal with Minnesota. They did not pick up the option on that contract because they just signed Naz Reid to an extension. So obviously money is probably an issue in Minnesota. So what do you guys think of those three guys in terms of should the Celtics, because they ain't got a lot of money, Should they go after Derrick Rose, Cam Reddish, who's now going to be on his, his fourth team? His next, he's been on three teams, and they're always got potential, but he ain't really fulfilled it yet, but he's you could see it. And or Taurean Prince.
I got my Cam Reddish stock from back in the day. It ain't looking so great now. So I'm not sure if I want to invest even more in him. Prince is interesting because he does give you, I think, two-way versatility. He's not a 3-and-D guy per se, because I think he can do more than just shoot threes, but yeah. He definitely gives you some flexibility and versatility, particularly when you're looking at guys who be coming off the bench. Derrick Rose intrigues me because I still think that he's got some juice left in him. He's a guy that you don't have to worry about where his head's going to be at. If, let's say, he plays 4, 5, 6 games and plays well, and then you just decide not to go with him and he stacks up a bunch of, you know, DNP CDs. I don't think he's at a point in his career where that's not going to just rattle him or frustrate him and make him think that, oh, I don't want to be here. This is BS, blah, blah, blah. I would probably lean towards one of those two guys over Cam Reddish. I would not have an issue with either one of them. If I put a gun in my head and said you got to pick one, I'd probably go with Prince just because of just the versatility that he gives you.
Yeah, I like that pick because Derrick Rose, as much as I would love to see him in Boston, I gotta push back. I don't know if he's still. I mean, he's obviously past his prime, so I don't know if he's necessarily someone that could fit in with the Celtics roster, other than, I guess, the experience aspect. But you can't really rely on him for much, obviously, on the floor because we know he's prone to injury as well. But again, from a selfish basketball standpoint, obviously that'd be cool to see him here in green.
Yeah, I mean, I think Derrick Rose, he can still score. I think Derrick Rose at two stages of his career. Okay, one, he's trying to win the chip. He's number one. Two, I think he's trying to increase his resume. I think he feels like he should make the Hall of Fame. And it's going to be close. Let's put that
out.
No former NBA MVP has ever not made the Hall. Okay, now,
he could be the first.
That might change with Rose, but no former MVP has ever been left out of the Hall. You got to add in Derrick's high school career because it's basketball Hall of Fame. It's not NBA Hall of Fame. So you got to add in number one recruit coming out of Simeon High. And then you got to add lead Memphis to the NCAA final game, a game they should have won if they hit some damn free throws. I mean, my God, they blew that game. But, and then you add in being probably one of the best guards in the league until the injuries kicked in. But he's also extended his career. He's had a 50-point game in Minnesota. Now, I don't know what happened this year in New York, but New York was a weird place. Remember, everybody was lamenting losing Evan Fournier. And
true.
Evan Fournier signed a 4-year, $78 million deal to play with the New York Knicks. He ain't played with the New York Knicks. He sat on the bench with the New York Knicks. He is useless to them. So you want to talk about dodging a bullet or now would he have had a better role with the Celtics and probably, yep. But literally, like, Thibodeau renders him unplayable. The same with Cam Reddish that we talked about earlier. And for whatever reason, the same with Derrick Rose. So is it that a Knicks thing that maybe Rose says, listen, man, get me out of here. I know I can still hoop. You know, he's 34 going on 35. Now, so obviously the legs have seen some better days, but I still think he can provide leadership. I know he was in New York. He was kind of a role model for Jalen Brunson and some of the young guys. He was not the old complaining. I've seen him before the Knicks Celtic game, drenched in sweat before the game, working hard, just trying to get his work in, being professional. And I think Derrick, Derrick's not a dude who's been real talkative over the years. People don't know him very well. He's had some troubles off the floor, years ago. So I think people don't really know. But I think, what I've heard, and he's a good dude in terms of his being a teammate, understanding that he ain't what he once was. So I think they could look at that. I like Taurean Prince. He's still relatively young. He's got dog in him. I think he wants to win. He's bounced around, obviously, Cleveland, Minnesota. You know, he had a time in Atlanta. So I think, and remember, the option was for $7.4 million. So it's not like Prince is going to go on the market looking for 15, right? So they might, the Celtics, because right now they got to get frugal. They got the $5 million exception to use, and they got to figure out a useful player for that exception. And I know Prince is probably going to, you know, he wants to win. You know what I'm saying? So I think a wing, they need another wing. I think that would be a good choice. But I also like Derrick Rose. I wouldn't be against that. Cam Reddish, I've seen him, but he just seems like that guy that, like, with his, like, we know. And I was watching, I don't know if you guys saw the 30 for 30 on Felipe Lopez and how damn amazing he was in high school, and he never got any better, right? He never grew, and he never, not anything, he got better, but he never got to that elite level, right? Where, you know, and he ended up, you know, having an okay NBA career, but never exceeding expectations. And I think Reddish has been one of those guys that was probably his best ball might have been in high school. Now, is he going to be a reliable? Three teams don't trade a 22, 23-year-old guy unless there's some problems. So I probably would stay away from Reddish. Although, you know, if you want to be young, get younger, get a fresh young body in there, it might be intriguing.
Well, we'll see what the Celtics do. They still have a lot of time to make some moves. I think that's a wrap on this week's episode of the A-List Podcast. For H-Rod Blakely and Gary Washburn, I'm Kwani Lunis. Thank you for sticking with us, listening, subscribing, sharing with friends, and we'll be back next week with more.